Tammy, there's something I really want to talk to you about, though.
I'm so nervous.
There's something I really want to talk to you about.
Why are you setting it up like that? Why are you trying to scare me?
I'm not trying to scare you. I'm scaring myself. And this has to do with finances. And this is not the most... I'm not doing okay financially. In my early 20s, I was saving my money. I never spent money. I was fully stacking my bread in my early 20s. Mid-20s, all of my money is gone.
Tell me what happened.
I saved up $20,000 and moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And I went out there to freelance and work freely and not be employed. I'm like, I'm going to have $20,000. Fast forward four years later, I spent all my money in Atlanta, Georgia. And here I am with no money. And I wanted to talk to you about finances because what the fuck? Why is it so hard to keep money? Why is it so hard to navigate that? I always saw money as you get a lot of it. You keep getting a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I thought if you get a lot of money, you by default have a lot of money. I didn't realize I was too ignorant, or I don't know what the word is.
But I disagree.
I didn't see myself.
I totally disagree.
Having money and then all of a sudden not having money. I thought I was going to have money forever when I had money. And now I'm 25 and I have no money. I'll be honest. I took financial literacy in high school and I
What did you not learn?
Nothing. In high school, in the financial literacy class, they showed us a movie about a woman in New York with a lot of money. And they're like, this is what we're watching. I'm like, I don't know what this has to do with. I don't know.
It's really interesting hearing you say that, because what I hear you say is that when you have a specific goal in mind, you're going to do what it takes to meet that goal.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's just true for finances. I think that's true in every area of your life, because I think that's your nature. That's your personality. I also think, because we keep falling back on this ADHD thing, is that that is your ability to hyper-focus. If you are, like, at that point in time, I believe you were really hyper-focused on getting to Atlanta and what you needed to secure that journey.
Locked in.
Right. So you were able to save like a considerable amount of money at a very young age. Like, to have $20,000 in the bank, there are people who go to college and can't figure out how to save $20,000 to put as a down payment on a home. Mm. So that's a massive accomplishment for you to do independently on your own, working the types of jobs that you were working at that time.
Thank you. It was hard.
One of the things that my father-in-law recently passed away. And one of the things that he would always tell me was, whenever you get paid, pay yourself. Mm. And it took me a lot of years to understand what he meant. And what he meant by that was, yes, you have obligations that you need to meet, but also reward yourself for the efforts that you've put in. And so he would always say, pay yourself. And he even mentioned, he's like, if you want to get yourself a really nice handbag or whatever, you go buy yourself that handbag, girl. And so, or if you want to get yourself a really cute pair of shoes, go buy that cute pair of shoes. But what he was saying was that while you're sacrificing, while you're paying your bills, while you're setting money aside, find a small way to pay yourself, reward yourself for all the efforts you put in, but don't neglect everything else. And so if pay yourself is not every payday if you get paid weekly, or not every payday if you get paid biweekly, but maybe once a month, you do something to reward yourself for the effort you put in, then pay yourself. And it took me a long time to understand what he meant.
What did you think pay yourself meant?
Like, I heard him when he first told me, but I wasn't in a state financially where I felt like I could pay myself anything. And right. So what I did is I paid the bills and I bought the groceries and I did what I had to do. And I never paid myself. Mm. And so it was years later when I realized, I get what he's saying. What he's saying, that is, in order for you to do this grind, which is not fun, right? And like, just go to work every day and do what you have to do. In order for you to be able to maintain that, you need to be doing something for you. And now that I'm more versed in that, and I understand self-care, I understand that paying yourself could be part of self-care. So maybe paying myself is yoga and paying for a yoga class. Maybe paying myself is therapy. Maybe paying myself is taking time for meditation. Maybe paying myself is paying for a massage or the things that I need to do to maintain self-care so that I am in an emotionally state and a mental state that allows me to continue to go back and do that grind.
So it's funny how I inverted completely, but there was a time where I never spent a dollar. I would pretend I'm broke. I can only afford nuggets, which was a really toxic other flip of the coin where not paying yourself anything and you're not eating and you're horrified to lose money because growing up in poverty, you never had money. So right. When you have money, you're afraid to go back to poverty.
It's like Great Depression.
The Great Depression. Exactly.
Like people
that.
Who grew up in the Great Depression, like their pantries are stocked like crazy now
making meat jello. they're still making mug cookies.
Right. But they are like stacking the pantry so that if that happens again, they're prepared. So this is you.
PTSD.
You not ever wanting to be. And absolutely, trauma is a real thing.
Yes.
Okay. So this was you.
My trauma response to having money was I didn't have money, actually. I would lie to myself. My girlfriend at the time saw that. I would never take us out to dates. I would never spend money on ourselves. But I had money. And I wasn't saving up for anything. I just was never spending it. And the one thing she told me that changed my brain entirely into this day, even when I'm broke, my girlfriend told me, okay, you might not have money, but you will always have money for food. And it was so simple because I wasn't eating either. But she told me, no matter how much money you have food money, bro. I just think it's embarrassing to at one point, like I said, in my early 20s, feel like I have it figured out. I have all this money. I have a full-time job. I was seen as someone who was going up. And then, and you mentioned before that life is not linear. Progression is not linear.
No.
And that's what I realized the hard way was that the up and up is only up until it's not. And then you're down again.
Right.
And I'm in the down part and I'm learning that myself. But
are you in the down part right now where we're having this conversation? Because I feel, for me, I'm super up just being here with you.
Oh, I mean, my mood is up.
Okay. So, but for you, like when you're looking at your progression of success, you feel like this is a, like kind of a low spot.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say down, but a low spot. And then, so one of the things that we do in my line of work when we're evaluating our clients, so what we do is we know what there's going to be like an ebb and flow, right?
Yeah.
And so people who are out there can't see what, you can't see what I'm doing, but like there's like an increase and you know, but it can't stay on an upward climb. That's really unnatural. So anybody to think that there's going to be a trend that is just constantly moving upward. And so like, you're going to go up and you're going to drop and then you're going to come back up and you're going to drop and you're going to come back up and you're going to drop. But the ultimate trend is upward. And so for you, what I feel like is that you've been on an upward trend and there's a, like there can be lows, but when you go back up, it's going to be a little higher than the last time that you were up. So if you follow the trajectory, it's actually like, if you draw a line from the start to the finish, it's actually a consistent projection or consistent line of moving upward. But between like your highs and lows, it just gets, your lows get lower and your highs get higher to the point that you're always moving forward. And I really believe that that's what you've experienced and where you're going. I don't see that there's any way that you aren't going to continue to progress upward. And like, there's lots of variables. So like financially, I believe ultimately that will happen, even though I feel like that's the hardest mountain to climb.
It is.
But I also feel, even just talking with you right now, I feel like psychologically and emotionally that you're in a place where the trajectory is moving higher, like understanding yourself and knowing yourself and being kind to yourself and forgiving and compassionate to yourself. I feel like you're moving upward. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're so right. No, you are okay, very
good,
correct.
Okay, good, good, good. You're not judging yourself and being unkind to yourself. So when you say, okay, I came here and now I'm in a low, can you really say that's a low? If you accept that your path to success is nonlinear,
yeah.
Can you really say this is a low, or can you just say that this is part of the trajectory that you are on and you can embrace it because it is a nonlinear trajectory?
You are so right. Yes.
So can we just celebrate Max for a minute?
Yay! We're still moving forward. Thank you for that, Tammy.
I'm so proud of you, because one of the most dangerous things that can happen is that for somebody who thinks they're on a linear path is to not accept failure, because they think that failure is always falling backwards, and they don't understand that failure can be falling forward.
What does falling forward look like?
Falling forward is understanding that if there's something that you attempted to do, and nobody who has experienced true success has not experienced failure, so first that, but falling forward means that I am moving toward a state of knowledge that is more knowledge than when I was before. And then you can stand up and say, okay, this is what I've learned from it. And I can take the knowledge from not being successful in what I tried to do. Mm. And I can take that knowledge. And now what I can do with that information is I can be better in my next attempt.
Yes.
That's falling forward, as opposed to individuals who think when I fall or I fail, I'm falling backward and now I have to start over. Nobody ever has to start over, right? You always have your past experience to propel you to the next thing that you're going to do.
Nobody has to start over.
Nobody. Why would you? Why would you ever have to start over?
That's good.
If you're a human, and our greatest gift above all the other primates is that we have the ability to think. And why would you ever have to start over?
That's so good.
Did you start over?
No, I have not started over.
No, you didn't start over. You know what you started from?
Hmm.
Experience. I'm so excited that I get to chat with you and make up time. Like what? For the time that I didn't know you before age 13, like I feel like this is an opportunity to like make up time and really know you in ways that I didn't get to know you. I never saw you take your first steps. This is so corny, but
no,
I never saw you. It's not. I'm glad you don't think it was, but like I didn't get to see you have all those firsts. I didn't drop you off at kindergarten. I didn't.
You know what you did do though?
Don't tell me.
You taught me how to drive.
Oh!
Yeah. How can we forget? You didn't, you might have not changed my diaper, but you taught me how to drive a car. That's way more important than a diaper change. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You remember that?
That was a big deal to me. I really wanted all of you to get your license.
I remember I failed the test twice and I gave up for 3 years though.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that I was unable to drive.
No,
I just
you
wasn't,
were a great driver.
It's just the rules. It was
the test part.
The test was hard.
It was hard.
And I didn't need my permit anyways. It was for my learner's permit, but
what
the hell? Why is the learner's permit test so difficult?
There was three or four of you who were, we were all trying to.
It was me, Caleb, Aiden, and Adam. You were teaching us all how to drive. You taught me how to drive a car.
I'm not the best driver ever, but it was a big deal. I just wanted you all to get your licenses.
And we did. We all have licenses now.
And you all drive legally.
We all drive legally now because of Tammy. It's all Tammy's fault.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anybody out there who might regret it? That was one of like the most joyous times of my life. We were out there. I think we're on like Rose Hill Road, right way out, just a little bit west of the city we live in. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Who helped create the debacle?
Right. And then Aiden backed up into the trees.
It was Aiden. Okay. I was like, who backed up into the trees and like scared the bejeezers out of
us? Yeah, we thought Aiden was going to kill us, drive us off a cliff, drive us into the forest, get stuck. That was good times.
It was never that bad. And what I was always thinking the whole time is even if we drive, like we get into the ditch.
We got enough kids to push us out.
Yeah, I've got four.
Come on.
For up and coming young men, you guys can help us push us out of this. We can make this happen.
We were never going to be in
trouble.
It's
all good. No. And nobody was ever going to get hurt. It was so great.
It was good times.
And then you ultimately did get your license.
But I failed the learner's permit test like 2 to 3 times. Did you ever get your learner's permit or did you straight up get your license?
I was raised in a different generation than you were.
What does that mean? So was there no learner's
permit?
What
that means is that I was raised in a generation where driver's education was offered in your high school.
Oh. Oh.
And so I took driver's ed after my sophomore year. I took driver's ed after the summer. And if you took driver's education at that time, then you were exempt from having to actually take the test because you had.
Whoa.
Because
you
had. Well, yeah, you passed, but it was somewhat rigorous. You had to physically drive with your instructor, and then you had to watch all of the films about driving, and you had to pass all of the tests inside that class. And so if you did all that, then you were eligible to get your license.
Not even a permit, just straight up your license.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was. I don't know if it was for people who were younger, but I was really scared of driving. And so I waited until after my sophomore year, and I was almost 17 by the time I got my license, which at that time in Kansas was a big deal because you can get your license as early as 13 or 14.
I was 18 when I got my license.
Yeah. So that speaks to something about our more urban existence, because individuals who live on a live in rural areas,
tractors.
They need to be able to drive. Yeah.
Tractors
or so forth. So they get their licenses much earlier so they can drive those vehicles. But that was not the case for you and I. So I was almost like 17 by the time I actually got my driver's license.
If middle school wasn't hard enough, I remember the cool kids driving themselves to middle school.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Those
freaks.
I have a word. I'm not going to call them freaks.
They're freaks. Middle school driving is horrifying to think about.
What was your first car?
My first car was a Mini Cooper. Remember that Mini Cooper?
I do. That was a great. Well, was it a great car?
It was a great car. I miss that Mini Cooper every day. I loved that Mini Cooper. I love Mini Coopers.
That was a good buy.
It was.
How was it reliable?
It was super reliable. Got me to Atlanta.
Awesome. And then I was like, you were talking about selling your car to come back home to Kansas, and it wasn't the Mini Cooper. What happened? Did it die? Did you have to bury it? Was it sad?
My Mini Cooper literally blew up in Atlanta. My Mini Cooper blew up. Like, ignited.
Define blew up.
Like, black smoke. Like, like, that shit blew up on me. And I had a girl in the car, and she was so scared. The girl in the car was so scared.
Were you trying to impress her?
No, we just got Dairy Queen, and we were trying to go home.
Okay, wait. But I have to ask you straight.
Yeah.
Did you neglect the Mini Cooper?
I neglected the Mini Cooper more than...
It was your fault.
Oh, yeah. I neglected that car as hard as you can neglect a car. No oil change. I wasn't getting it checked on because no tires. I neglected that car so badly.
I feel like that car needs reparations.
Oh, God, does it? I need a round two. I need another Mini Cooper. Rest in peace. I feel bad. I treated her so poorly. Do you deal with imposter syndrome?
Are you kidding? Absolutely.
With what?
Everything.
Everything.
I really have to be honest. I don't think that there's anybody who doesn't wrestle with imposter syndrome. And the reason why I think everybody, and I mean everybody, wrestles with imposter syndrome is because there isn't any role that doesn't have or that you can't create ideological image of what that person should be. And the ideological image is always an image of perfection. And the fact is that by nature, humans are not perfect. And so you are never, I don't care what role it is you have, you will never amount to perfection in that role.
You're not perfect.
You can't be. We don't embrace the thought that we are imperfectly perfect. But if you embrace the fact that I'm different from everybody else, that means that the ideology or the picture of perfection can exist for you. Right? You can't, if I can embrace myself as perfectly myself, then that ultimately means that I am not the epitome of whatever this role is. And that then goes back to, I'm a crossing guard, or I'm a barista, or I'm a server at a table, or I'm in the stock market, or I'm the president of the United States. If I can't release my ideology of what perfection is, then I am an imposter in that role.
When do you deal with imposter syndrome? Because for me, even the job I have now as a videographer,
yes,
I'm not the best videographer.
Yes.
I feel like they could hire someone much better than me.
Okay.
But I have imposter syndrome with my job, especially. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I am not the man that should be filling this role right now. I am not him. And so...
Okay, and this is why you need me in your life.
Yes.
You need me in your life to say you are exactly you are exactly the person that they need in that role right now. And this is why I think imposter syndrome permeates all professions. And for anybody who is listening, imposter syndrome is BS.
BS.
Absolutely. It's BS. So sometimes I deal with that in my workplace, and I question, you know, why am I in the role that I've been placed in when I feel like I'm striving to be what is needed for this role?
Yeah.
But somebody else has already decided you are what we need for this role. Does that? And so I'm like, I find myself.
Interesting.
And I mean, you're going to find this too. Like, you find yourself wanting to prove that you are the person to fulfill the role that you've already been given.
Ah, that's what I'm doing now. I'm like trying to show them that I am capable, or that I am worthy.
And for me, I'm like this is what capitalism is built on.
Yes.
And so it's built on always having people striving to be more than what they've already delivered or who they already are. Always being in a state of questioning whether or not you're actually qualified to do the job that you've already been given.
That's so good. That's actually helping me right now put things into perspective.
But even the job that I was assigned to do, I'm questioning whether or not I'm actually qualified to do it. Why?
They already gave it to you. Someone else already, yeah, what you said is someone else already knew you were capable, but you're trying to show that you are.
They would not have taken the chance if they really didn't believe that there was something of value there. Mm. And I feel like you are right now in the same role where you're working right now. They would have never taken the chance.
Right.
If they didn't truly believe that you had something to add a value to their organization, if they didn't think that bringing you on in some way, form, or fashion wouldn't be an asset to what they're already doing. Mm. And I think you really need to own that. You don't have to be perfect.
You're worth something, and imposter syndrome is bullshit. That's what you just said.
I really think imposter syndrome is garbage.
I want to know how... Where does imposter syndrome even come from? What the hell? Why do we get that? Why do we deal with that? And
imposter syndrome is kind of like synonymous with this new adulting ideology. So I feel like the two go hand in hand.
And I want to transition to this imposter syndrome into adulting. And okay. Why being adult, or what is adulting? Why adulting is bullshit as well. Having to be an adult and feeling like an imposter trying to be an adult. I'm not old enough to, I don't know. I shouldn't have this house. I shouldn't have bills, or like, I just being an imposter and being an adult.
I don't think that there is absolutely no one who is a self-made person or a self-made success. There's no such thing. There's absolutely positive. I don't care. Like, when you actually dig in deep and you look at the history upon people who are self, quote unquote, self-made millionaires.
What about Mr. Beast? Mm-mm. He's not self-made.
Nobody is. There is always someone upon whose shoulders you stood to get where you are. Mm. And in, like, could Mr. Beast do that without a following? Could he do that without people YouTube. Who believed in him? Could he do that without the platform? Absolutely not. I do not believe that there is truly a self-made anybody.
That's good. That's facts.
That it is facts. Mm-hmm. Like, can you be a Mr. Beast without fans?
No. Or without YouTube. Couldn't be without fans or YouTube.
Can you be a Mr. Beast with... Right. Will right. YouTube or a platform on which you write? You can't do that. And so that's where I start with being like adulting. So let's just start, because we're talking about adulting at that point. And so when we're challenging people or accusing people of not adulting.
Accusing people. Why aren't you grown? Is that what you're meaning? Why aren't you an adult? Why aren't you here yet?
Yeah.
Accusing people.
Where are you? So number one, we already talked about how success in life is nonlinear, which means that I have to accept that different individuals who are at the same age will be at different places in their path to success. So that's why I feel like adulting is garbage, because it, again, is another measure that says, I'm going to put you on a linear path, and if you haven't achieved X by Y, then you are a failure, and that's just not true. So, like,
that follows the linear success mindset,
right? Which and you can't. So when you think about people like Morgan Freeman and Samuel Jackson, who weren't really successful until, like, I mean, they weren't successful until the point that some people had completed a career. Retired and started a new career.
Right.
Like, these gentlemen were not successful until that point in their life, but now they are iconic actors, right? And other people want to emulate what they have done. So this is why I think talking about adulting is trash. And the other thing that is true about adulting is that even your best efforts to adult in the underneath the paradigm that you think fits, even your best efforts will fall short depending on the audience that's listening to you. Is that, or the audience or that you compare yourself to?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I'm not. So
you're making sense. I remember at one point, I was trying to speed run adulting. Because I figured that's what
Me speed run. What does that look like?
Speed running adulting. You're trying to cross off the checklist of what an adult does.
Mm-hmm,
get a job. Get a car.
Yes. Okay.
That's different than setting goals. It wasn't me setting goals for myself. It was me trying to be as grown as possible early on.
Garbage.
Seeking out.
Okay, this makes sense. Yeah.
Older shenanigans. Older shenanigans, doing too much at a young age.
Yeah.
Wanting to be an adult really fast. It's a survival tactic for some people.
Okay, fair.
I feel like for some people, adulting is, I'm kicked out of my house. I need to get a job. I need to be grown so I can take care of myself.
Can't dismiss that reality.
Right. And sometimes it is what it is, but it's really unfair.
It is unfair because, like, kicked out of my house, I have to get a job, is one thing. But then what I think is the fallacy or the illogic of adulting is that I'm kicked out of my house, I need to get a job to survive, and then more.
Right.
Like, in order for me to prove that I'm an adult, I have to do more. Mm. When in my interpretation, if you can do what it takes with your support system, not just independently, do what it takes for you to survive and wake up every morning and deal with all that life throws at you until you go to bed at night, that's adulting.
Yeah. That's the true definition of adulting.
But we add societally, we add all these extra layers on top of it. But really, the thing is, can I use the resources that have been given to me and that I can tap into? That's
adulting.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's
too much pressure on us. If you could summarize quickly, adulting and imposter syndrome, is there a last drop of wisdom or?
Yeah. I had heard this once when I was very young, and it's advice that I have, will stay with me always. And the advice is, do not ever let anyone convince you that you are not capable of doing what you are already doing.
Mm. You just listened to You and I Just Talk with Max and Tammy. Thank you. If you want to hear more of this episode, an uncut version, a very long version, get us on patreon.com/youandijusttalk. Look us up, follow, the episodes are there. Other stuff is there too. Good night. You like that outro? Am I good at that? I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
We both are. We don't know what we're doing.